Thank you, Karen, for, you didn't tell me you're going to make me cry. As Karen said, we worked together at the hotel for a while when we were both still cleaning up the wreckage of our lives and getting into our chosen profession, and she's probably the only one that could get me up here, really. She asked me to do this probably 8 months ago, and I figured I'd come up with an excuse by then on why I couldn't do it, but because of the program, I keep my commitments, and I'm here to do it. This is the first time I'm doing this. I'm nervous, and I accepted my sponsor's challenge to do it with no notes, no nothing. So I might jump back and forth. It might be a little non-sequential, but I figure people told me if I do it from the, write it down, you do it from the head. When you just get up here and speak, you do it from the heart. And my head's always messed me up, so I figured, let's let the heart do it today. Again, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I guess the best way to start today would be the beginning. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm not a Southern girl at all. I'm one of them obnoxious Yankees. My sponsor once told me there should probably be a separate program from people from Philadelphia because we are arrogant attitudes, very cynical, and we don't trust anybody. Don't know why that is. Maybe it's the climate. Who knows? Could be the Eagles. They're always losing. But I grew up, born and raised in Philly. My childhood was not normal. I grew up Catholic school, strict Catholic parents. My mother was a very devout Catholic, didn't drink, didn't smoke. And then you get my dad, who was one of us. When I was five, they divorced. A lot of people, I hear them say how it was terrible. I was thrilled when my parents got divorced. I didn't like my dad that much. He was gone a lot when we were younger with a business that he had at that time. And when he was around, he was always pissed off. It took me getting into recovery to realize that the reason why he was always pissed off is that he was not drinking around my mother. That was something you could not do around my mother. And so he was always restless, irritable, and discontent. You always had to walk on eggs when Dad was around, you know, don't be too loud, don't do this. And so when they got divorced, I was like, woohoo. You know, it's like now I was with my mother, who I was extremely close with. I never even went on visitation with him. I guess in some way I felt that it was betraying my dad or my mom. Although, God love her, she never said anything like that. So I didn't have a relationship with my dad. And when I was nine, my mom got cancer. And that was probably the beginning of my faith leaving, because I remember praying every night, going to church and novenas and everything I could to heal her, and it didn't work. She died within 6 months of being diagnosed, which left me and my brother pretty much orphans, because Dad was not really the parenting type. By some cruel twist of fate, he wound up getting custody of us. And what followed after that probably took down the rest of any faith that I had at that time. I don't have to tell any of you that living with an alcoholic is just hell. And living with a parent that's an alcoholic changes you in a very serious way. When he was drinking, he wasn't around. He'd be gone 3, 4, 5 days at a time. I remember having to go to the emergency room with my little brother and having to sign off as a parent at 12 years old. I remember, because nobody could find him, I remember going into many bars and, you know, looking for him, 11 and 12 years old. And a lot of people are going to wonder, you know, we lived in a different time then, and I lived in a different neighborhood. In my neighborhood, you didn't bring in outsiders. You didn't call child services. You didn't call the police. You handled your business amongst yourself. So everybody knew this shit was going on, but it just kept going on. You know, there was never any investigations. The schools knew. It was just the way it was then. But you know, who knows if it would have been better going into foster care. You know, you hear those horror stories too. So again, it was, you know, he'd be gone a lot, and sometimes it got real scary. I remember one morning getting up, and we lived in a row home in Philadelphia, and they have these little walkways to the street, and he's laying there all bloody, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. Apparently he picked a fight with a bunch of 20-year-olds at the bar and lost, and barely made it home, and all my neighbors and all my classmates got to see him laying there as I, you know, struggled to get him in. Atlantic City opened up around that time, so he decided that's how he was going to support the family, was gambling. And you can guess how that went. And I remember one time I had to go down at 14 years old. He called me up. He was out of money and stuck in Atlantic City, which is about an hour and a half from Philly. And he's, you got to come down. There's money on top of the fridge. You got to bring that to me. For some reason, this is normal to me, I did it. I took a bus to Atlantic City to give him the money, and I figure he'll drive home. Well, valet parking pulls up. Now, the whole time I'm gambling with him now. Remember now that it was 18. I'm 14, standing behind him, telling him whether to bet black or red because he's so drunk. He didn't know what he was doing. We get the valet parker pulls up, and I'm 14. I don't drive yet. He gets in and gets in the back seat and passes out. So I had to drive home from Atlantic City at 14 years old, not knowing what the hell. And going over the bridge, Jesus, mother, I was scared to death. But that was life with Dad. I mean, there is just, when he was around, he never treated me like a child. I was his equal. I paid the bills. I made sure grocery shopping was done and, you know, whatever. He never had a job, too. Forgot to mention that one. So he was constantly like the con artist, on the hustle all the time. Money here, this great scheme here, you know, typical of our disease. You know, he just, the rules didn't apply to him. A regular 9-to-5 job was a joke. And subsequently, throughout my entire life, to the day he died, if I tell him I got a promotion or something, oh, you're never going to get anywhere working for anybody. You know, it was always work for yourself. Well, it didn't work real well for him. And as a result of that, we never had any money. I used to, I couldn't even tell you how many times we had the gas, the electric, the water, everything turned off. I used to keep my dead mother's checkbook there so I could write a bad check on a closed account to them when they came to turn off the electric or the gas. It worked sometimes too. So much so that when I went to actually get a checking account at like 16, 17, all this shit came up that I wrote all these bad checks, but I was 12, you know, so they didn't, you know, they didn't really hold that against me, thank God. But sometimes it didn't work, and I remember one particular brutal winter, a northern winter now, with no heat, no hot water the entire time. It was brutal. And the thing that got me, and the reason I'm bringing this up especially, is my dad always believed in God. He always kept that Catholic, you know, thing that God was going to help us out. God would come in and he would save us at the last hour. And sometimes he did. Sometimes we had the church come by for Christmas and bring some food. Sometimes some money would show up out of the blue. Most times it didn't work. And as a result, I really didn't have a lot of faith that God would take care of me in any way, any real way. So that was pretty much how my childhood went. There's probably 1,000 little stories I could tell you, but everybody in this room is alcoholic, so we know how bad it can get and how bad it can affect the family. So I'll fast forward to the first time that I got drunk. I was probably 12, right around there. And I did it like I do most things, and out of rebellion. And I remember making a drink with every liquor in the liquor cabinet in one drink. And got so sick. I mean, so sick. I think I threw up for 3 days. But I'll never forget that feeling of, for the first time, I didn't have to worry about everything. I didn't have to worry about whether utilities were on, where my brother was, what my dad, was he dead? I didn't worry about any of it for the first time. And that started a real dangerous pattern for me of escaping through drugs and alcohol. There's entire portions of my childhood I can honestly tell you I don't remember. Maybe that's a good thing. You know, it's just big blocks of empty blank time. But I do remember that first drunk, and I do remember starting smoking weed, everything else in high school. I went to Catholic school for 11 years, and my last year, my dad got in a fight with the mother superior and pulled me out and threw me in public school for my last year. And the only people I knew in public school were all the dealers in my neighborhood. So they were my friends, okay? And all of my friends were older, too. I always hung around with an older crowd for whatever reason, and I guess it was easier to get booze and drugs and stuff when people are a little older. And they all have their own house or whatever to party at. You know, those were considerations back then. I got through, like I said, I got through for some reason, because I came from Catholic school to public. It was a private Catholic school, so it was an advanced curriculum. So when I showed up at public school, everything they were doing I already had learned in freshman year. So I literally just showed up for tests. I had 82 days absent. Because I would just, you know, get high. Wake up in the morning, go meet the people at school, smoke, maybe I'd go to a class or two, and that was it. But I had straight A's. So they didn't know what to do with me. You know, I had straight A's, but yet I was a huge problem child, and they knew it. But they let me graduate. I had to go to summer school for gym, of all things. And I don't even want to get into that. That was just torture, okay? But I did, and I got my diploma, and I proceeded on with my life. I started college, and when I was in my second year of college, I moved out by then this time. I moved out in high school. Stayed with friends here, there, everywhere. Once I got hit adolescence, it became a different kind of unbearable at my house, so I split. And to this day, I regret that because I left my brother there and I had an amends to do on that with him. And luckily I was able to do that fairly recently. But when I was in my, in college, I was always working part-time and I got a part-time job at an insurance company as a file girl. I wasn't even there 3 weeks and the head litigation supervisor pissed me off, and I told him off. Okay, that's just my way. Go figure, he goes to the president of the company and tells him that he thinks I have the right temperament to be an adjuster. And I then became the youngest adjuster in the history of the company. That was a good thing as far as money-wise. I was making a lot more money of anybody my age, but it also made me say goodbye to college, and I started working there full time. The thing about that first job was everybody I worked with were heavy, heavy drinkers. They were all older than me, and every day was going to lunch, having drinks, after work, having drinks. If we had to work late for an audit or something, the boss bought in beer and wine. That was our payment for working late. So granted, like I said, everybody was older than me, so their drinking was a little bit more advanced, but I caught up pretty quick. And that was pretty much every single person at that company now is either dead or in recovery. Every single one. And, you know, I've been told it's a stressful profession, but I also happen to think that the alcoholics know alcoholics, and that's what they hired, you know. But the thing about my drinking career and everything is that I always managed to maintain a double life somehow. I always got the good grades, had the good job, had the apartment, had the car. I always made sure I kept it together in some way because I never had a net. I couldn't go home to dad. I couldn't go home. There was nobody who was going to take care of me but me. So as bad as it would get, I'd always rein it in just so I could keep that illusion of having my life together. At one point, I remember it used to be, you know, work all week, Friday and Saturday night party. Then it was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday party. Then it was Thursday night because it's ladies' night, and Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it just kind of went that way. I lost jobs because of it, I'm sure, except I usually quit before I was fired. That's a big, I'm a preemptive quitter, whether it be be relationships or anything. I get out before you can get me out, you know. And which brings me to relationships. I guess because of all the responsibility I had as a kid, that I never wanted to get married. I felt I raised my family. I'm done. I'm going to have fun now. No kids, no husband. Plus, it's a little bit hard to maintain that double life with a spouse. Turns out you just got to get the right spouse. Didn't know that, but so I had like long-term relationships, 3 years, 4 years, but I always got out. I was even engaged twice and bailed both times on that. I never saw that for me. So the years go by as they will, 1,000 nights all like the rest. I've pretty much tried every drug out there at one time or another. I'm an equal opportunity. If it'll get me high, I'll try it. But alcohol is always involved, always. Brings me to, there's a lot that went on. I moved to California, stuff like that. You know, I did get to do a lot of stuff single and live my life, supposedly. So let's fast forward to when I moved to Atlanta. While I was in California, my dad got married again, and I'm thrilled. You know, like, good, the burden's on her. I don't got to deal with this shit anymore. It's on her. And it went that way for a while until she died pretty suddenly. There's two women now that didn't drink, didn't smoke, everything, and he outlasted them both. Go figure. I don't know why that happens, but it did. So, of course, I was down here for the funeral and started flying down on weekends to take care of him, and it was just painfully obvious that he couldn't take care of himself. Not just, you know, that his health was getting bad, but also financially. He just didn't know how to. All he had was Social Security. He never did anything for his future. So that was beer and cigarettes, his Social Security check. So, you know, he didn't pay any other bills. So right around 9/11, and I was in D.C. when 9/11 happened, too. That was a life changer. And happened to be there on work. And dealt with that by getting drunk, by the way, too. He had asked me over and over to come down and help him out. So I guess one of the things 9/11 left with a lot of us is that, you know, family is important, our loved ones are important. So I made the decision to quit my job, change my whole life, and move down here to take care of my dad. The codependent, once again, all back. And I did. I moved down here November of 2001. Wow, I have an anniversary, just thought of that. Anyway, started taking care of my father. I took care of the bills, did everything there, and went to work. And, you know, basically we went back 20 years to when I was taking care of him before. I started dating someone down here, nice enough guy. He was pretty much on my level as far as just wanted to have fun. And, you know, he had a boat. I met him at $2 margarita night, so what does that tell you? Okay. And he was attracted to the fact that I had a pint of tequila in my purse because the drinks weren't strong enough and I wasn't going to pay for the extra shot. He thought that was really clever. And it was, actually. But long story short, one night, I was drinking with my dad, and I don't know what made me bring it up, but I brought up something that had happened with him, and he lost it, denied it ever happened, screaming, yelling, and beat the living crap out of me. Now, here I am, an adult, he did this. Now, granted, I was at a disadvantage. I was sitting on the floor. I probably could have taken him if I was on the right leverage, but it made me realize how far in denial he was about some things. And I moved out the next day. I had two black eyes. You had to see me. I mean, it was ridiculous that a 60-year-old man was going to do this to me, but he did. So I moved in with Todd. This all comes into play. I, for lack of anything better to do, of course, I forgave my dad and still helped him out, still paid the bills, etc. You know how us alcoholics are so sorry after stuff like that happens. And I believed he was, but he would never get off me about living in sin with Todd. Every day, you know, the Catholic, you know, you're living in sin. When are you going to get married? Da, 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 da. And he wore me down, to be honest with you. And then God had a little surprise for me. At 38 years old, I found out I was pregnant. Didn't even think I could get pregnant because of all the chances I took in the past and never did, you know. So here I am at 38, and I decided to go ahead and get married. And the reason I bring that up is, once again, for all the wrong reasons, all right? I loved him. I still do love him. Don't get me wrong, but two people couldn't be more different. And once I became a mother and had my daughter, I changed. I was no longer his party buddy. I was no longer the one that was going to go out on the boat and we're going to party and have fun all weekend. I was with the baby. And I didn't want drunks around the baby. And, you know, and I went a long time without drinking, drugging, nothing. A couple years. And this actually hurt me as far as coming into recovery, because those long periods of time where I wouldn't drink or use made me think I wasn't an alcoholic. That I can turn it off at any time when it's important, I have a reason, I could do it. And up till then, I could. You know, I could turn it off. The fact that I was miserable all the time when I was straight, yeah, that was just to be expected, you know. We started, you know, the marriage went on. Again, we didn't have a lot in common other than our daughter. But he's a good guy. He may be one of us. It's not up to me to work that program or figure that out. But our thinking was definitely both poisonous in a lot of ways. Which brings me to really where everything began, the downfall, the worst. When Jordan was like 4, I was taking her to my in-laws and somebody ran a light and creamed us and totaled the car. By the grace of God, my daughter was fine, but it messed up my back, my knee, my neck. You know, I was not doing so hot. And I discovered pills. And from the day that I met them until today, they took me down faster than anything else that I could ever. If I could have maybe, you know, held it together for another 10 years or so, this definitely accelerated it. And the beauty of it was that nobody knows when you're taking pills. You can't smell it. I mean, where have they been all my life? You know what I mean? I'd take a Xanax, take another, you know. My doctor sent me to pain management. I'm sure a lot of you probably know what that is. And it's a joke, all right? It's legal. It's a legal dealer. I mean, I used to practice this whole long thing to tell the doctor about why I needed this much or this medication increased. They didn't give a shit. Okay, that's what you think you need. There you go. As long as I keep paying the money every 30 days. And you can really lie to yourself when you have, you know, that kind of addiction, because the doctor's giving them to me. All right? They can't. It's legal. I'm not doing anything, you know. The fact that I was dyslexic and took 4 every 2 hours instead of 2 every 4 hours, that's just the way that was, you know. And and then, of course, when all else fails, you drink with them. And it definitely took me down quick. To say I had a specific bottom, I guess I did, but I had so many before that. I wound up, when Dad finally died, I had moved him in with us when he was ill for a year. I had both my dad and my daughter in diapers at the same time. It was a rough year. Got through it with pills. You know, everything, when he died, I decided, okay, I don't need these pills anymore. I'm fine. I'm okay. And I decided to quit cold turkey. you don't do that, apparently. And I wound up with my kidneys shut down in the ICU. They thought they were going to have to put me on dialysis. I got a big, you know, femoral artery thing in my leg. But, you know, that's not a bottom. No. I'm okay. You know, that wasn't the pills. That was me quitting the pills. There's a difference. And it's pretty much how I viewed it. And, you know, so I constantly, you know, I still know, again, I was married to the right guy then. Huge enabler. He felt it easier to let me have my medication than have to deal with me off of it, you know. And I would get them, you know, it was every 28 days, and I would do all of them within a week. I'd do 30 days worth of medication in a couple days, and then I'd be sick for 3 weeks. So all this time I'm feeling sorry for myself that I'm not in the marriage, he's not the kind of husband I need. Well, I was nowhere near the wife that I should have been. Now, again, with the double life thing, I managed to keep it under wraps because, like I said, they're legal, they're hard to detect. I was PTA, I was room mom, I was all that stuff, you know, but I had to schedule things around whether I'd have the medication or not. I don't know if I can come. Well, my doctor's appointment's Tuesday. Okay, I'll be there Wednesday, because otherwise I'm sick. I'm so sick, I can't get out of bed. So this went on and on. And again, I would quit for a while. It wasn't a problem, but I'd always go back. It was almost like those periods that I quit were the periods that I was just rewarding myself later for having quit that time. I knew I was going to get high again, so, you know, that helped. All through it, I drank. Drank all through it. You know, that's one thing. My husband does a lot of drinking, so it's always in the house, you know. And I never thought I had a drinking problem. I didn't think I had any problems, to be honest with you. It was everybody else was messing with me, you know. My husband wasn't right. Work wasn't right. This wasn't right. And I was the perennial victim. And, you know, that old expression, you know, well, if you had my life, you'd drink too. That's exactly how I felt. And I guess, you know, there's a lot of stuff that went on, like I said, a lot of bottoms, supposedly, but the main one was one night we got into a fight, police were called, and they locked me up, go figure, okay? I was never really good with authority, let's put it that way. And I sat in jail for 60 days on this for $200 bail, because I didn't know who to call. The only people I knew in Georgia were my husband and his family and our extended couple friends. While I'm sitting in jail, he went and got a restraining order against me for a year. I couldn't see my daughter. I couldn't go to my house. I couldn't do anything. Now, I know his divorce, I forgot to tell you, he was married twice before, which up north, that's a huge red flag. Down here, I guess that's normal. I don't know. But, you know, I guess he knew what to do, so he, you know, to keep me away from everything. And I was literally in a hotel room with nothing when I got out of jail. I had barely had clothes, no car, no job, no family, no money, nothing. And that's what it took to get me in here. And I'll be honest with you, I did not come in here because I thought I was an addict. I came in here because I thought my life was unmanageable. And you guys had maybe had some good suggestions for me. And you did, apparently. So it took me, I started out at a Celebrate Recovery, actually to church. Someone had asked me to go. And there's two ladies in here that both took me aside after the first one and said, you need to go to AA. And I'm like, well, whatever. You know, okay, I'll go to AA, whatever you got. And I still did not believe I was really an alcoholic or an addict. Even though every single thing I ever did to screw my life up involved drugs or alcohol, no, that wasn't the reason why. So I started coming in here, and I started listening, and started to realize that I am. And really, you know, I didn't have a problem with that in the beginning. All right, I realized, you know, especially if you look at my life on paper, duh, you know. But I had a real problem with God. My sponsor kept me on step three forever. And it was like, I was really mad about that. You know, I'm like, okay, all right. And I remember going up to my temporary sponsor after I was reading the book. And, you know, in the beginning, I thought my higher power was the group conscious. Well, a couple chapters into it, she comes to pick me up. I go, what's this with God? I said, all of a sudden, it's God. And I'll never forget, she does this. You know, like, we reeled you in. Now, you know, it's God. And because of all my family history and everything with my dad depending on God, it was very hard for me, very hard for me to do that. And then I started to realize, I started to hear what some people were saying to me, that, you know, God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. Okay? Is that me? What am I doing? There we go. Thank you. God expects me to do what I can do. God expects me to get up to work. God expects me to get up and take care of that little girl. God expects me to do for other people and do service work. And it's only the things that I can't do is the doors that He's going to open. And once I got my head around that, it was smooth sailing after that. Because I had that, you know, we all carry baggage from our childhood. And I had a father that trusted God on everything but never did anything. Never got a job. Never did anything that he was supposed to do as a father or, you know, human being. And, but you know what, I don't have any anger towards him because, you know, all the traits that I thought were characteristics I got from my dad was just the same disease we shared. He did the best he could with what he knew. And he was an alcoholic. You know, his priority wasn't taking care of the kids. His priority was getting himself drunk and keeping himself drunk. And I'll never regret coming down here and taking care of him. I was the only one with him when he died. And I'll tell you something. Here's a little side story is, I don't know what everyone's beliefs are about afterlife, etc., but for whatever reason, that man was scared. He was looking back on his life and he was scared. There was no peace at the end for him. And I think that he realized what he did with his life. And I absolutely believe, you know, our God is a forgiving God and that, you know, he made his peace with God at some point. But I'll be honest, I never saw anyone so scared to die as I did him towards the end. Since I came into the program, and I'm sorry I'm jumping back and forth, but God has made himself so known in my life that it's almost funny to even think it wasn't him at some point. I kind of wish he didn't have to take it to the wire like he does. You know, I'd be okay if you just, you know. But, you know, I got a car. I mean, I moved in with my sponsor, God love her. She picked me up out of jail. They picked me up again because I hadn't paid the fines. Well, how can you pay the fines when every penny I'm making is going towards staying at the hotel? I moved in with my sponsor. As a result, I started getting my daughter more. Any restraining order just went by the wayside because he realized he didn't want to be a parent. I mean, God love him. That's not what he's about. He much rather prefers his single life, and that's the way it is. And I am happy to say the day I fired my lawyer and turned it over to God is the day I got full custody of my daughter. I have her all the time now. And we're so happy. I can't even begin to tell you how amazing it is to be the mother that I always thought I was, but now I really am. And the fact that she knows everything, she's wise beyond her 12 years, just makes it all the more better because she sees someone who won't give up. She sees how, you know, that maybe you might be crippled by certain things like our disease and how you turn it around. And she also sees how you turn it over to God the right way. The fact that you don't say, oh, God will take care of it, but I'm not going to work. You know, she sees me work and she sees God work in our life. I happen to have... Again, I've been in insurance my whole life. I've been an agent my whole life. And subsequent arrests that I've had, a couple assault charges, I do have a temper, had a temper. It's getting better. Haven't been arrested lately, so that's a good thing. But you know, they prevent you from getting an insurance license, okay, to practice again. And I went to her parent teacher. This is just one of the many God smiles on my life. I went to my daughter's parent teacher meeting, and it just so happens that at that time, my husband and I were kind of sharing her. He'd have her a couple days, I'd have her a couple days. Because I was working at the hotel nights, he had to have her some days. And the one teacher noticed that the certain days that Todd would have her, her homework wasn't done, her grades started slipping, etc. And I told the teacher, I said, well, you know, I'm trying to find another job, a 9-to-5, you know, so I can be there to do her homework more. She's not at her dad's. And she starts grilling me, well, what did you do? And I'm wondering, why are you making this meeting about me, you know? Turns out her husband is a big insurance agent in the area. And she goes, go see my husband. I get hired on the spot. Now, I'm kind of telling him, and you know, we went to lunch kind of thing, an informal, and he knew the agent I worked with before, et cetera, and I don't know what made me say it, but I said, well, look, I'm just going to tell you. I said, I'm in a program. He looks at me, he goes, me too. He's got 14 years, okay? Now, is that God? I'm at a parent-teacher meeting that directs me here, and it happens to be one of us. So I knew there would be some, you know, hurdles to overcome to get my license back. And what I didn't realize is the company I work for is extremely old school as far as they don't like any arrests. They don't even like a bad credit score. So it's been hanging over my head for months. Am I going to be able to keep this job? Are they going to accept it? Is Georgia going to license me? Well, my last day to work was supposed to be November 1st. I'm still working. So it still has hurdles to go through, you know, it has to go through the next chain all the way to Ohio to the main company. But so far, God's been getting me through. You know, I mentioned to somebody just last week, I think I remember saying that, you know, the fact that I'm up at night worried about it because I just took a big financial bite with a new house for my daughter and I, which also God made available to me. But I said, you know, I'm used to working without a net, but it's harder when you're balancing a kid. And I realized that's not true. I have a net. I have all you people. I have the program, and I have God. And it's the only net I need. If I trust in Him and keep doing the right thing, I'll get through this. Maybe this job isn't what I'm supposed to be at. Maybe there's a better one. I have to believe that. As of right now, like I said, I still have it. God has managed to make sure we want for nothing, all right? I mean, we don't have our needs, but who does? I mean, our wants, but, you know, who does? He's come through in my life so much in the last 2 years. It's amazing. And I remember when I picked up my first year, Chip, all these people coming up after, and this is a bit of advice for everybody. All these people coming up going, this is where the real work starts. What the hell? You know, it's like I just went through my entire last year was the worst year of my life, and they're telling me this is when the real work starts. Guess what? They're right. But you don't have to tell us that right away, okay? They are right. It is where the real work starts because, you know, you're dealing with so many, putting out so many fires the first year of all of your, you know, wreckage of your past just flying at you. And, you know, you really, when you start to do the spiritual work and actually know God is there for you, feel it. Know that He's there. Know that I don't have to worry. You know, of course I'm gonna worry sometimes. You know, it's our nature. But know that really in the end, it's going to be okay. And this isn't really a happy ending story, okay? It's a continuing story, all right? Where I am now and where I was 2 years ago don't even remotely resemble each other. But I still have problems every day with worry and turning things over. I'm still dealing with the 50 pounds I put on when I got sober. They don't tell you about that one. and I'm still dealing with sometimes on the promises I do have problems with. Will not regret the past. I'm not there yet. I've got a whole bunch of regrets still from the past. yes, I have seen where my experience can benefit others, and every time that happens, it makes me feel a little better about things. But there's always going to be things I wished I did differently, and that's just the way that is. So I guess in closing, this is an ongoing story. This is not over. I'm not cured. My disease is just waiting at any time for me to let up on my spiritual condition. I remember walking in here when I first came in, and there was a sign, you know, that it's a reprieve based on our spiritual condition. And that's it. The days that I don't pray, the days that I'm too rushed, the days that I don't turn it over to God, really, really apparent. Because my restlessness, irritability especially, I got road rage like unbelievable. Luckily, though, they don't hear me, so that helps, you know. But, you know, I'm a work in progress. And I'm going to, you know, I'll have 2 years this month, and I'm just going to, I just have to keep going with you people as my net, and trust God and trust the process. Thanks.